Welcome to Harlow on Healthcare. I'm David Harlow, and I invite you to join me by my virtual hearth as I sit down with healthcare leaders to discuss building the future of healthcare. Today, my guest is Gigi Sorensen. Gigi is at Global Med. She's the chief clinical officer there, and that is a telehealth company. And we will hear a lot more about telehealth from Gigi as we begin our conversation. Welcome, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, David. It's an honor to be part of your chat.
So I wonder if you could give us a 25-word or less introduction to Global Med and perhaps a slightly more expansive introduction to yourself and how you find yourself here today.
Well, Global Med is an international company that is about 18 years old now, and we are a company that produces both hardware and software specific for the use in telemedicine. And where we find ourselves is in a multitude of international areas and national areas also. We are our largest provider of our hardware and software stations is in the Veterans Administration, where we are honored to be able to provide virtual care scenarios for the veterans of our country. Myself, I am a nurse by training. Background, I started in the cardiovascular services line and was an advanced practice nurse in that arena. I switched over to telemedicine about 10 years and have been blessed in standing up a multitude of different kind of telemedicine programs, from provider to provider type relationships, direct to consumer, and also a very, very robust remote patient monitoring program based out of northern and central Arizona, and been involved nationally in regards to telemedicine work, and joined the Global Med team approximately 2.5 years ago. Honored to come on here so that I could have a clinical-facing input role, direct input role, where prior to that, I had been a client of Global Med's for 8 years, and so came on board to help assist in product development, applicability, and help our sales team so that when they are working with new clients, if someone wants to stand up a program or expand a program, I can step in and help and guide. So it's an honor and a privilege to be with this company and enjoy every day what I do here.
Great. Well, I am located in the Metro Boston area. It's a little more densely populated by medical types than some wide open spaces in Arizona. And obviously, there's sort of different approaches and different levels of adoption to telemedicine, given the different geographies. I know you've also done some international work, and I wonder if you could speak to that and the ways in which telemedicine tools are perhaps more easily adopted given the circumstances.
Sure. One point I want to make is that geography does play a role in how creative you need to be in regards to standing up your program. And telemedicine, one of the major drivers behind that is patient access to care, to quality care. But it really doesn't matter if that patient happens to be an 85-year-old individual living in a high-rise apartment downtown Boston in the Bronx, or is a Native American out on the reservation where population density may be 2 to 5 people per square mile, or they're in Africa, say Zimbabwe, Ghana, where we've done work, or I was recently in Haiti helping stand up a program in Haiti. So geography, even though it seems it may differ, the basic root comes down to, can a patient get access to the care they deliver? So in regards to our international work, what I first hinted at was we do have a large deployment in Zimbabwe where we were able to place 16 of our telemedicine stations that's referred to as a transportable exam station. It's essentially the size of a travel-on suitcase. When you open it up, it is a fully contained unit that has computer, the software loaded on it to retrieve vital signs, images, etc., and then all of the peripheral devices you would need in order to provide a primary care exam, and in some ways a specialty exam, such as a vital sign unit that automatically uploads, a stethoscope, camera that can be used for wound care and dermatological care, and also ENT work, so otoscope for ear exams, nose, and then also eyes. We can place an ultrasound unit in there. We've placed a small ECG unit, so a 12-lead ECG can be obtained. And we were able to deploy those across Zimbabwe at many, many remote clinics. Quite wonderful. We used a similar type packaging deal in Haiti, but made it even smaller and put it in a backpack. So that seems to do well in those more extreme rural, austere type of environments. We did have the opportunity to partner on a humanitarian case in Ghana, actually, recently, where we were able to provide a not-for-profit unit. One of our devices, our test units, was taken to Ghana, and over a period of a few days, they were able to perform almost 1,000 exams on people, where they were able to connect back to one of the major cities in Ghana, to one of a provider professional who is able to see these many, many people in these rural villages out in Ghana. Very exciting to be part of that program.
So tell me a little bit more about the package of services. What you're describing is a hardware package, and I'm curious about how this ties into software and how this ties into the clinician experience at the other end of the internet.
Absolutely. It's both a hardware and software package that goes out. And our trademark software is called Encounter, and that is loaded on all our devices when they go out. And that platform is a secure platform where the provider can be in their office, on their PC, on their laptop, and the patient can be as close to home as possible and or in their home to receive the care. Since the unit that's sent out, the test unit that we use in these direct into the home or small clinic environments, it's on wheels. It's moved from place to place, and so that it can be taken, sat down right next to the patient. And so instead of a patient having to travel, whether it's by foot or motorbike or car or train, however they get to their clinics, they are able to stay in their village, maybe in a community greeting hall or something, can be taken into a private room and have all of the devices that can take their blood pressure, take all their other vital signs, look in their ears, nose, throat, look at any wounds they might have, et cetera, et cetera. And the provider on the other end can see all of this live and then have all of it documented and packaged in the software package, where it then can be uploaded to the cloud and be accessible for the clinician to retrieve again if needed, if there are continuity of care type of issues that have to be taken care of, or sent to another facility for a referral. So it's essentially a mobile clinic in a suitcase that goes.
So there has been, until recently, now that we're dealing with the coronavirus and all the ramifications of that pandemic, until recently, I would say that overall, in terms of general adoption of telemedicine, while you and I may be speaking as folks who are enthusiastic about this, the general population, or as one of my pals like to say, the average bear is less interested in telemedicine. And it's been overall, I would say, a disappointment for the industry in terms of adoption. And you're talking about some very interesting and unusual, at least from the perspective of sitting not far from a whole bunch of Harvard teaching hospitals. It's a different sort of environment that you're talking about going into. How do you see the openness to using these tools and the acceptance of these tools in some of the far-flung locations that you've been servicing? And how do you see the adoption of these tools increasing in United States cities and towns where we haven't seen that level of adoption.
What's interesting is on the international market, or even in the United States, those markets that are extremely rural and don't have access to providers, adoption of this type of virtual health care is extremely high because people understand the need and the void that they have in their lives of quality health care delivery. And having to feel alone, isolated, it's frightening if you feel you have a medical condition that you can't control yourself and you have no access to that care. But by adding the virtual environment for healthcare, taking healthcare to the patient and having a provider on the other end who has eyes on that patient, the patient has eyes on the doctor, so a relationship can be built, it's a very, very strong and powerful thing to watch, and to watch people get excited that they finally have care that they're craving either for themselves or their family members. You bring that back to the States, and the same thing can happen. My initial geography and scope of work, like I said, was in North and Central Arizona, extremely rural areas, and very, very limited healthcare at times. You look at Wyoming, also very limited care. Alaska, even if you get into Oklahoma and those areas, still some very rural, very disparate types of pockets of care. And being able to take care as close to the patient as possible is exciting. And you just watch people, if the person going to the patient with the hardware and software make it seem as if it is a carefully thought out, non-complex, non-scary type of environment, the patient just, you watch them come into it. I have had very, very few patients turn me down for that type of environment because they know that they're going to get the care that they need. And then they know that it can happen over and over and over again. It won't just be one time and then they're left on their own again. And so that's where it's exciting. And then our software also allows multiple people to be brought into the appointment. And so if you have young kid at college by themselves and they have to have an appointment with a specialist, and mom and dad are a couple thousand miles away, they can be brought into the appointment. And so that gives a level of comfort. An elderly patient and their son and daughter doesn't live in the area, they can be brought in. That gives comfort and a sense of security and helps with the understanding of the treatment plan that's being brought out. People, once they see it, they love it. Sometimes it takes a little bit of explaining and talking them through how it's going to happen, but that's all part of the experience of virtual healthcare and the education that goes with it.
If you're just tuning in, this is Harlow on Healthcare, coming to you on Healthcare Now Radio. I'm David Harlow, and my guest today is Gigi Sorensen, Chief Clinical Officer of Global Med. Gigi, I think we have to turn now to a discussion of the coronavirus pandemic and what telemedicine is going to do or has been doing in managing this situation, whether it's for managing other sorts of patients who maybe can thereby stay away from healthcare facilities and providers and leave the doors open for coronavirus patients, or whether we need remote diagnostic and treatment visits for coronavirus patients in order to keep folks out of the streets, out of the offices, away from potentially infecting healthcare providers. How is that working? How is the equipment that you've described get implemented into these sorts of situations? And what do you see happening on the ground this week?
It has been quite a wild and crazy week to week and a half, and actually a very, very exciting time for telemedicine right now, where we had talked earlier about a slow, almost lackluster type of adoption. We're now seeing the proverbial floodgates opening in regards to access to telemedicine. I've never heard the term used so many times on national TV in my entire career in telemedicine. that I have over the last couple of weeks. So it's exciting. And it's like almost something you've been waiting for all your life, and now it's going to happen. And what we've seen are positive steps taking to be able to implement telemedicine in regards to care for the COVID-19 population and or other populations. And so there's been an understanding and a relaxation of some of the very strict rules, regulations, policies that have been set. So CMS is offering wonderful guidance, some relaxation. The DEA is offering guidance and some relaxation so that patients needing behavioral health and or opioid management can get it and not be stymied. We have FCC stepping in with broadband expansion and waivers on data plans so patients don't worry about using up their data to connect with a provider for a virtual visit. And so many, many things are happening.
Gigi, let me just back up for a second and highlight that in terms of some of the HHS changes, Medicare changes that have been happening, these include lifting of limitations on state-specific licensure, lifting of restrictions on payment for certain telemedicine encounters, and lifting of HIPAA enforcement with respect to certain telemedicine platforms and uses. All of these in the name of making telemedicine more accessible to more people as soon as possible.
Absolutely, yes. And the geographic relaxation. So all of those things have made it quite wonderful being able to implement this. So you have two different camps of people who will benefit from telemedicine and virtual health visits now. One is the patient who doesn't want or need to be exposed to the COVID-19 patients that are potentially out there, or others with flu is still quite high in many areas of the country too. And so that exposure can go down. So those patients needing continuity of care, whether it's for hypertension, diabetes, behavioral health needs, many other types of chronic care management so that they can remain in their home and get the care now with this relaxation of originating site. And so this can be software driven. We don't even have to talk about big pieces of hardware. And so that can be done. And then also now being able to take the telemedicine, whether it's one of our carts or mobile units and that, into facilities such as nursing homes so that those patients don't have to leave the nursing home for screening, diagnosis, even care treatment, because it can be, many of the care treatment needs, if it's initiated early enough, can be done in the skilled nursing facility or the long-term care facility, and that patient doesn't have to be brought to the hospital, which leaves the beds open for the sickest of the sick, and you're not exposing people to additional viral loads. Then it can be used in the hospitals themselves if you're trying to isolate infected and non-infected patients in regards to care delivery by being able to use telemedicine and reducing the number of providers who are then exposed, which is helpful too because our provider base is extremely vulnerable at this time. And so if we can keep providers away from infected patients as much as possible, that helps also. So many different applications that we're seeing being used in.
So if you've described a number of different types of settings, are these all coming online from your perspective and sort of the same, same speed, or are people along the adoption curve? I would imagine, for example, that nursing facilities might be further back on the adoption curve, not yet ready, understanding, if explained, as you just did, that this would actually make sense, but maybe not ready to actually jump into it, or have I got that wrong?
No, I think those that haven't jumped on know they need to jump on. And I've been on a number of calls over the past week or so where people are going, we knew we should have done this. And so it's like, okay, we can't go back, so let's start now. How can we get you up and running? Then it puts pressure on us to make it as easy and as simple as possible so that what you give them is what they need and they can be immediately successful with it. Then we're like, okay, we'll work it out as we go, and we'll still think long-term of what you would like your program to be, but right now, let's solve what's your number one crisis point you need to solve and really, really fine-tune and hone in. And that's where I think we're going to see the success of the program. If people don't get too big and broad in their, you know, I need telemedicine to do everything. No, tell me your top one to two things that we need to take care of right now, because it's happening so fast and the surge is going to come so fast and so deep. So it's being very, very specific and fine-tuned and holding hands and developing very fast relationships with the teams, both from the vendor side and the provider side.
So in this sort of lean, so to speak, approach, does the platform support the multiple participant call? So yeah. You could have a patient in a facility and a adult child at home who can log into that call?
Yes, absolutely. The same functionality is there. It's being very specific with the provider, the facility, going, what type of hardware do you need? The software's the same. It doesn't matter what piece of hardware you want to pick to accomplish your needs. The software's the same. And then getting them trained and get the equipment deployed quickly and in their facility so they can start providing the care that they need to.
So now that the federal government has done in about 2 days what we had hoped that they'd do for the past 15 years or so, what's standing in the way of widespread adoption tomorrow?
You know, I'm seeing that wall just crumble down brick by brick by brick, almost morning to evening. And so my hope is that programs that are being stood up now are being stood up with the thought of long term, not just how to get through the next 30, 60, 90 days, but how do we start with a long term vision of how do we then hardwire it and grow it? And so stand up reputable software programs, hardware solutions that truly fit the need, not just band-aiding something right now. That's my fear, is once we get through all of this, it will be, oh, we never should have done that. Well, maybe it's because they did it the wrong way. You still have to be calculated in what you're doing and take that deep breath and figure out what it is you truly need to solve, not just panic and grab something. So that is my hope in going forward, and that's how Global Med has positioned themselves, is this is the start of a relationship. Let's get you up so you can get the care you need to your patients, support to your providers, but let's look to a long-term plan.
Looking ahead, don't you think that at the end of this tunnel, so to speak, at the end of the national emergency, all of these expansive decisions get rolled back and we're dealing with state border issues and licensure issues and site of care issues and all that stuff? Or do you think that some of these are likely to be waived long term?
I think they're likely to be waived long term, but it will be based on the data that can be aggregated during the state of emergency. How many patients were seen? How many patients were kept from admission? How many less transports were done so that your EMS system isn't burdened? How many breaches did not occur or did occur? You know, so that there's specific data points that they can look at, the CPT codes that were put in. How many patients had, you know, that they received the meds, that meds were ordered, meds were filled, meds were taken. As much data, I'm hoping, can be gathered, and then that's shared with the entities to show that this was successful and minimal rollback of what's being proposed right now would happen. Patients will see this now, see how helpful it has been to their lives or their loved ones' lives, and speak up in support of what us on the industry side have been saying for years and years.
It does actually work, folks.
Yes.
So to wrap things up today, Gigi, if you were to wake up tomorrow and find yourself 5 years in the future, what is one thing in healthcare that you would hope or maybe expect to find has changed drastically?
I think what we'll see is that what we thought we needed from healthcare and documentation today in 5 years will be much more streamlined, smaller, accurate, and because of that, more and more people will be receiving healthcare that they need, and so the health of our communities desperately improves.
That's a wonderfully positive vision of the future. Thank you for sharing that.
Thanks for asking. I appreciate it.
You have been listening to Harlow on Healthcare. Join us at healthcarenowradio.com. Let's continue the conversation on building the future of healthcare together at #HarlowOnHC. I'm David Harlow, keeping the fire going and holding a seat open for you. Until next time.